Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 133.
This week on the podcast, serious question, guys. Should we move Election Day to Black Friday? At least that's a day that people leave their houses.
The Ferguson non-indictment rightly leads to the opposite of hugs and rainbows.
Chuck Hagel glowers through the most aggressively awkward resignation ceremony in history.
And Republican panic over their own Benghazi report proves that even they know what they don't know. But facts are so boring.
Also, who's Jim Webb? Answer, not the president. Also, not anybody.
And a teen criminal turned GOP know-it-all implores the Obama daughters to act classier, but forgets that she's the one who's been arrested for stealing from a Belk department store.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Do that.
And happy belated Thanksgiving.
Yes, we were in different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You in New York. I was in Mexico. I was in Tulum on Thanksgiving.
Did you have turkey on Thanksgiving?
I did not, no. There were places in Tulum that were like serving Thanksgiving meals, but like we did not.
You're not trying to get involved in those.
No.
Last year I was in Argentina for Thanksgiving and we had steak for Thanksgiving and promised ourselves that would be our new tradition. And then we had turkey again this year.
Oh,
and I was
God.
Like, short-lived promises, guys.
Yeah.
Very short-lived.
Yeah.
It's like a real turkey fiasco.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
Did you do any Black Friday shopping? I know how
I accidentally did some Black Saturday shopping.
Oh, that's okay. I thought about doing that as well. But
a friend of mine like needed to buy a workout outfit for a class she was going to like in an hour. And so we went into a store and then I saw a pair of jeans on sale that I already owned and was like, all right, I'll buy those.
Yeah.
But I did not go into the crowds and try to get a deal on something on Friday because I'm not apparently like most Americans.
Right. Because people.
People.
Come
Guys.
On. There was too much Black Friday shopping going on. And also not enough because it's down. It's like way down this year because like, you know, because now there's Cyber Monday and there's whatever. Oh, there's Giving Tuesday now. Did you know that?
That's not a thing. That can't be a thing.
Yeah, that's a
I
thing.
I refuse to let that be a thing.
But anyway, the amount of people who are shopping on Black Friday almost exactly doubles the amount of people who voted in the midterm elections. That is not the way to do it.
These are both November days where you can leave your house and do something Only one of those actions takes only, like, 5 minutes.
Right?
Black Friday shopping
you're
takes
stuck.
All fucking day.
That's what you're
and
doing.
And a lot of that day is spent waiting in lines, which
yeah,
is
waiting
no,
in
the
line.
Number one thing people complain about when they're voting is they don't want to wait in line.
Right.
But on Black Friday, everyone's trying
to... Yeah, you'll go and camp out in the freezing-ass cold in Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah,
and
so you
wait
get a $30 microwave.
Wait for a Furby.
Yeah.
6 a.m. at
oh,
Toys R Us.
The Furby era.
This is a story that I am not making up from thin air, by the
no,
way. This is a story that I have lived.
It involves too many specifics to be just totally made up.
Yeah. So, but you know what? Hey, people would take a discounted black eye if you offered it to them most of the time, which is
so true.
Come on. But anyway, I mean, what do we have to do here? Do we have to give people like, you know, discounts on their flat screens, like with their I voted sticker or something? Like, what do we need?
We have a better idea.
Yeah.
And that is to just make Black Friday Election Day.
Let's do it.
Let's do that.
You go.
People have the day off
already.
You're
already off.
They already are leaving their houses at 6 a.m. for unquestionable errands. So, like, they definitely have time to
you
stop by the polling
in.
Place.
You can fit
that
in
on Black Friday for sure.
Yeah.
That would be the easiest thing you would do that day.
You could just do it at Walmart, too.
Yeah.
Like, let's have a Walmart be a polling place.
Why not? A Black Friday Walmart is a great place to cast your vote for the next senator or president in your state. And then you could get deals on I voted stickers.
That's it.
You know,
whatever.
Give you a flat screen TV. We'll give you a $30 microwave. The $30 microwave thing strikes me particularly
I had
hard.
One of these.
I know. You had one of these $30 microwaves. Mm-hmm. And when I was going shopping for a microwave recently, I was like, people are getting them for $30. I can't just be going and spending $50 on a microwave. And then I realized that the $20 was the money I was paying to not have to shop on Black Friday.
Right,
I was paying to not have to shop, and it was worth every penny. That $20 was one of the best $20 I ever spent.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, the thing that I have always liked about Black Friday, at least just since I've moved to Los Angeles, is that at least in West Hollywood, it doesn't seem to be a thing that like people are that into. I mean, yeah. It still happens, certainly, but, like, I went Black Friday shopping 1 year and, like, went and was able to get, like, a doorbuster deal at the Best Buy in West Hollywood at, like, 10 a.m., even though they'd been open since, like, 5, and it was, like, a ghost town in there.
Yeah.
And they still had everything, because it's, like...
Who's trying to deal with this? Although I do remember once going Black Friday shopping with you and your parents, and, like...
Oh, yeah.
I have, like, a distinct memory of, like... some sort of feeding frenzy going on outside of this trough filled with towels.
We got good Pyrex that year, too.
Remember
that?
Yes, oh yeah, we all have the same Pyrex. All of our friends have the same set of Pyrex that we all got that year Black Friday shopping. And then nobody walked in there thinking they needed Pyrex, P.S.
No.
I didn't need the, I mean, like, I still don't need the Pyrex. I mean, no. It's nice to have Pyrex, I guess, but, like, what am I doing with that many sizes of Pyrex? Nothing.
No.
So, yeah. In any case, if we have to go as far as to making Black Friday Election Day, I'm amenable to that. I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'm not against it.
Yeah.
If twice as many people are leaving their houses to go run stupid errands on Black Friday as are voting on Election Day, a thing that takes 5 seconds, then
let's
make it happen. Yeah, but I think this points to the one thing that I feel like really defines a day that you can get people out of their houses. Holidays. Like a day off.
Yes.
Let's at least make Election Day a holiday.
Trying
for God's
to get this
sakes.
Passed. Bernie Sanders, bless his heart.
Yeah, hero, an American hero. That's
it. Right.
Yeah. In any case, so that was the news of this week. If you have been living in America in the last 2 weeks, you have only heard about what's going on in Ferguson or what is relatedly going on in your nearby town.
Or what's going on in your Facebook feed.
Or what's going on in your
Facebook
feed.
I did a Facebook purge this week.
Yes,
I was
so
excited.
Proud of you.
I know. I was really proud of myself, too.
Because
there's a lot of people who are going to notice, people I know, a coworker.
I was also a little concerned for you because I didn't really need to do a Facebook purge, and I was wondering who your Facebook friends were.
Well, that's the thing that was, like, so interesting to me. Like, I mean, look, I have a lot of family members that, like, I do not agree with politically.
Sure.
But I'll handle that.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. Like, you can be an idiot.
It takes all kinds.
You can be an idiot on Facebook, like, if you want to have, like, conservative conspiracy theories or whatever. Yeah. But, like, I finally just decided this week that, like, racism was where I drew the line.
Yeah, like, you gotta draw the line somewhere.
So, there was a lot of, you know, either vague or sometimes overt racism going on. And so I was like, you know what? Goodbye.
Time to purge.
Cousins.
No longer in touch with
cousins,
them.
Cousins, aunts, coworkers. I didn't care who it was. I'd had some tequila in me.
Of course.
And I was...
You needed the strength?
On Facebook, late at night, in Mexico... And I made some decisions.
And they, I think, were the right ones, ultimately, which is not something you can say every day for someone who's sitting in the middle of the night drinking tequila on Facebook.
No, you do a lot of things wrong in that situation.
But I think this was the right move.
I think so, too.
Anyway, in the week that we abandoned you, some big news broke in the Ferguson situation.
Yeah.
There was a grand jury that was hearing or was deciding whether or not to indict Darren Wilson, the cop that shot Michael Brown. And they decided not to indict him.
They did not indict.
So he will not be tried for this crime.
No.
And that, I rightfully made everyone pretty angry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So basically, and this is like...
Made Ray angry.
It made Ray Ray really angry. She's pissed now. Just hearing about it again is enough to get her blood boiling.
She can't stand it.
But yeah, I've learned some things about the judicial system that I probably was not super clear on before all of this began. Because I never have understood what grand juries
do. Grand juries, I know.
No. Like, what are they up to?
Yeah.
So grand juries are basically deciding whether or not cases should be heard by regular juries.
Usually what they're in the business of doing is sending everything to trial.
Right. You don't usually hear about grand juries. You hear about grand juries in the context of people being indicted.
Yeah.
Like so-and-so was indicted by a grand jury. And that's when you know there's going to be a trial.
Right.
In this case, we were waiting to hear whether there would be a trial at all. And normally that's not really a question with grand juries. In this case, and I think in the case of a lot of times that cops come up for indictment, the grand jury said no. But what was interesting about the case was that the county prosecutor basically like almost tried the case like it was the actual case and not like they were just trying to decide whether there was enough evidence to move forward.
And really misled the members of the grand jury about what their job in the situation was in the first place.
Right. So it became a very controversial decision because it seems like, you know, among all of the other things that we're going to talk about, like the sort of stories that don't quite add up from various bystanders that came out of the woodwork later and had different stories, and then Darren Wilson doesn't seem to know what happened that night.
No.
And, like, all of those things are one problem, and one of the reasons you need a trial, because that's what a trial does.
That's where you figure out these
things. That's where you figure out what actually happened.
Right.
But it was also just sort of interesting because it seems like the grand jury itself almost made a sort of decision on the basis of this information
right.
that they were supposed to just be deciding existed or not. Well, I mean,
normally the person who is either being who may be indicted doesn't even testify to the grand jury. So right. it was interesting that he even went at all.
Yeah, and he testified for hours.
For hours, and it wasn't really, and that was another thing that was, you know,
unusual
about this was because he testified, but in the sort of, in the grand jury setting, he was not really cross-examined. He wasn't questioned, so he was just sort of allowed to go in there and just kind of ramble on and, like, say insane things that, like,
right.
could not possibly be true. Like, if you're a rational person, like, reading the transcripts of this thing, like, yeah. where he was, like, at one point he said that, like, Michael Brown handed something to his friend and, like, indicated that, like, it was the thing that they had stolen from the convenience store where they were, which clued him into the fact that, like, he was, you know, had stolen something, which, like, it's obviously, like, here, hold these
stolen
goods while I beat up this police officer. Right. Like, that's not, like, that's just
not a thing that's happening to people. No.
No, said no one ever.
Right, like, exactly. That's
right? Okay.
Yeah. So, and this is something, that, I mean, I think, because most grand juries just send things to trial, no one really has talked a lot in the media until recently about how sort of the disparity between the times that cops come up, cops fail to get indicted right. under grand juries, and regular people almost yeah. always get indicted.
Well, at least on the federal level, and there's less statistics about sort of the
right.
Well,
it's surprising how few statistics level. There are, by the way.
Well,
about
right,
all of
exactly.
This.
But at least at the federal level, where they have statistics, the Bureau of Justice says that last year, U.S. attorneys prosecuted 162,000...
This is in 2010. That's the most recent year of information they have.
162,000 federal cases. No indictments in only 11 of
yeah.
them. 11 of 162,000. Everything gets sent to trial.
Yeah.
Like, I mean...
That's how it works. Well, generally, you're not going through the trouble of bringing something in front of a grand jury and presenting all
no.
of that information,
like,
if you don't think there's a cause
right, exactly.
for a trial.
Like, we know he shot him.
Right.
I mean,
like,
That's
the information we needed for a trial.
Right.
So in any case, and this is sort of like, you know, in the context already of just, you know, this grand jury not really kind of being given the proper instructions, and then, you know, just sort of generally the sort of issues of, you know, how people respond to cops on the stand, because
right.
it's very difficult, I think. For some reason, people just don't want to indict cops, and a lot of people think it's because cops sort of, like, exude authority and
yeah.
kind of... It's difficult for you to judge a cop or at least it's more difficult for you to judge a cop than it is for you to judge a teenager.
Right.
And
yeah.
so that is sort of a challenge in these cases.
Yeah.
So, and like we said, Wilson was just claiming any old thing happened on the day, at the scene of the crime.
Well, and they did such a good job of sort of, you know, making all of the other witnesses, like, seem like they were not credible witnesses.
Right.
But, I mean,
who is a credible witness in this situation?
Who is to say that? And that's another thing that you sort of decide all of these facts in trial. So, you know, like, the grand jury just hears these things and then decides whether there's, like, enough information to sort of, like, really dig into these things. And that's
yeah.
what was so interesting about this. Like, usually they don't take this long. Usually the deliberations aren't this long. And there were also a lot of issues, too. Like, you know, 9 of the 13, I think, were white in this grand jury.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people were rightly upset about
yeah.
this. You know, and who's to say whether he would have gotten off a trial? He may have. But
right.
I think to say
but-
that you're not even going to...
At least
the
trial has looked into it.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and he was not the only one making inconsistent statements about what happened that night, but there are a lot of witnesses of various stripes that popped out of the woodwork who either, you know, and because the case was so well publicized, people's testimony started to change. And so that was another thing, is like no one really, like, can know what happened without digging in deeper, because the sort of intense media coverage has affected the way that the people who actually were witnesses, like, interpreted the events that they saw and remembered the events that they saw. These
yeah.
are all things you could learn in a trial.
That's right.
In any case.
Yeah.
We're pro-trial here.
Big time.
Here at Brain Trust Live.
Yeah.
And so that was a big controversy. And as you might not be surprised to hear, it led to protests.
Right. Well, and I think that it led to, I mean, this, as we've talked about on the podcast before, like, Ferguson was just sort of like, waiting for something like this to happen. I mean, not in a good way, but just in the sense that, like, something was going to happen in Ferguson because of the racial tensions that have been going on there for really decades at this point. Right. I mean, it's bad there. The entire police department is white. It's a huge African-American community. African-Americans are disproportionately pulled over, you know, for various things. And it's just, it's not been a good situation there. So, and there's already been protests, obviously.
There have been protests going on already for months.
So it wasn't shocking. And I think people also knew it was coming. I mean, the governor had declared like a state of emergency before it was... I think that it was fairly clear, like,
what was about.
SNL did something this week where they were like, the fact that he, like, declared a state of emergency, it was like basically like would be the same as like telling someone to show up in an orange jumpsuit to their arraignment, like,
right? Yeah,
or, you know, because it was like, of course it was going to be, you know, a non-indictment, because like all signs leading up to it were pointing to that. So I think that was also another thing.
Well,
like,
the weird way that trial had been carried out, or the weird way that hearing had been carried out.
So people were just waiting to erupt, I think. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And
it also took so long too. Grand juries don't usually take that long.
It took so long. And it's sort of like has hit this sort of like flashpoint issue anyway. Like it's the issue is timely, not just because of this case, but because, you know, people were still feeling, I think, very frustrated by the Trayvon Martin situation. And there have been other cases like this. And obviously, black men are shot by the police all the fucking time.
Right.
And because of that, there were huge protests in a lot of other cities that weren't even really about Ferguson as much as they were sort of about symbolically, like, what happened there. I mean, I know in New York, there have been a lot of these instances over the years. There has been sort of an undercurrent of frustration about it. There's an undercurrent of frustration because there were policies like stop and frisk that were going on. And then New York has a long history of shooting African-American men who were unarmed for no reason.
Yep.
So there were huge protests there. L.A. had some action, which I'm always proud of L.A. when they can get some protest action going on.
I know, me too.
Because L.A. can be a real lame city protest-wise.
Yeah, it really can.
It's hard to get together with people. You don't know what's going on. It's not like you hear some... Like, my mom heard protesters walking up 6th Avenue or whatever, and she was like, oh, protesters. Here, you could have gone about your life never having heard that the 101 got shut down by protesters, but it happened.
It did.
And there was also a protest where they, like, went to Rodeo and Wilshire and just, like, laid down in the street.
Yep.
I would have loved to be part of that one.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have been way too scared to
go do that
alone.
A lot of places actually shut down malls on Black Friday.
Right,
yeah. That was a big thing.
No, and in Ferguson, the first few days of protests were quite eventful. There were riots, there was looting, there were all of those things. And then they kind of calmed down after a while, but there were some very scary nights there.
Yeah.
But the protests are still kind of going on. I mean, this really, no one has sort of figured out how to tamp down on this situation.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Obama and Eric Holder have been sort of like holding random meetings to try to figure out what to do, but like they're not really coming out against sort of the root of the problem that hard. Obama doesn't want to go to Ferguson. I think he's saying because he doesn't want to cause the sort of like stress on the police force and the other security forces by going there. I feel like he could bring security forces if he really wanted to, because he's the president.
But I
think that there's sort of a bigger issue at play here.
Well, and I think you're absolutely right. And in the cities where this took place everywhere across the country, I mean, obviously this was something specific to protest, but I mean, these were all sort of like rooted in a larger issue that needs dealt with just in terms of race, which we have, you know, African-Americans have been feeling this way, specifically with the police force. I mean, you know,
for all of time,
for all of time. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, until somehow that gets dealt with, and I'm not going to pretend that I have the answers.
Right.
I mean, you know, there's going to be continued things like this happening. I mean,
certainly, when these issues arise, they're going to erupt more quickly. I think we're sort of at a turning point because this has been going on for years.
Yeah, of course.
So this is not, this is not really all of it. This is not that unusual of a circumstance, yeah. even. This was just like, you take like a depressed community that's been isolated, that's, mm-hmm. you know, economically and socially isolated from the surrounding area, yeah. and you put them in the middle of a firestorm like this. And that is like a bad scene, especially yeah. only a couple years after the same thing happened to a very high profile case in a teen, in, you know, for a teen in Florida, yeah. where an absolute crazy person got off
yeah.
for shooting him.
And I think social media is helping all of these.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and it's sort of like the Occupy model where, like, you can really put together a protest very quickly these days. And yep. it doesn't have to be, like, called by an organization anymore, which is helpful.
Yeah.
Because I feel like when you have to wait for an organization to act, you're like, oh, well, on May yeah. 20th, we'll have a protest. And it'll be months from now. And yeah. we'll all show up with matching signs and blah, blah, yeah. blah. Whereas this, you know, has its own sort of aesthetics. It has its own hashtag. It has the, like, hands up, don't shoot imagery yeah. that you can really adapt to anywhere.
Yeah. yeah.
And so it's a lot easier to kind of pull something together quickly.
Yeah. But, you know, this whole situation has really been, from the beginning, has been just, like, in a study of what not to do on every level.
Oh,
my
God.
I mean, like, from the beginning act of shooting an unarmed person, black, white, or otherwise.
Right.
To then sort of, like, you know, the release of him, you know, trying to victim shame when they released right. that video of him from the convenience store, which didn't have anything to do with his debt, to the, you know, militarization of the police force, where they sent out right. tanks to
deal with protesters.
To deal with protesters and the press. They tried yeah. to shut down the press. They to this bungled grand jury, seemingly. I right. mean, even Justice Scalia, I don't know if you saw that, like,
yes.
talked about, like, how terrible...
This was not what the grand jury
was
to
supposed
do.
To be doing. And, like, he's, like, the wackiest person
he's
on Earth.
The wackiest person on Earth, but he has apparently read the Constitution, right. which was news
so
to me.
So it's literally, like, no one involved in this from the beginning did one thing right.
Yeah. No, it's true. And I think that's where Holder and Obama have kind of scrambled to fill in some
yeah,
of the blanks.
I think
you
so
know,
too.
Holder is talking about announcing new guidelines that will prevent racial profiling, or that will sort of like codify how not to racially profile
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
They're expecting to do that this week. He was off speaking at, you know, Ebenezer Baptist Church, where Martin Luther King was a preacher. And mm-hmm. So he's been very critical of the decision not to indict Darren Wilson, and has sort of expressed his sympathy for the protesters, or not sympathy, but his kind of
yeah.
his solidarity with the protesters. And then Obama is talking about releasing tougher standards when it comes to military gear being given to the police.
Yes.
He did not go as far on this as I think that he should have.
Well, a lot of people thought that.
But he's, I guess at least someone's talking about it, because that was one of the first things we said about this whole situation yeah. was that the thing that made this explode was not even the shooting. It was the police reaction
yeah,
to the protesters.
Yeah. I think he has also asked for some money for body cameras.
Yes.
As well.
He has asked for $263 million.
That has been, and that's been a new sort of push post yeah. this, because in communities where they have instituted that, instances like this have gone way down.
Yeah, well, you can't act like a crazy person
right.
when everyone, the whole world is watching you.
Yeah,
it's harder
exactly.
to justify your actions.
Yeah.
When
so I feel like I'd be in favor of that. It
yeah,
seems
no,
like a good thing to do.
I think, well, especially if they're going to keep giving military grade weapons to the police, I would like them to at least have cameras
on
them,
right?
So that we can
if they
watch.
Can have a tank. They can have like a GoPro.
Exactly.
Like,
I would like to know like what they're up to. With
they're having
all that
Black
equipment.
Friday sales on GoPros. I saw the ads.
Oh, good. Maybe the government can buy $263 million worth of them.
Yeah, exactly.
For the police force. Yeah. So he doesn't want to stop giving this military grade weaponry to the police, and he's claiming that it's effective, or the administration has sort of claimed to look into this and thinks it's effective.
Why does he do that?
Like, don't, like, what is the National Guard for then? And but in any case, while claiming that this has sort of strengthened local policing, he did say that there need to be better standards in terms of like how people are trained to use this equipment, and like which equipment actually is appropriate for community policing.
Yeah.
I would argue that most of it is
most
not.
Of it
but
is not.
I'm not a police expert.
Yeah.
What do I know? And then he also has been pushing to require sort of better reports from these incidents, like sort of a standardized procedure
yeah.
so that they can actually like report what happened after
right.
in a standardized way. And then he started a task force.
No.
He loves a good task
great.
Force. Here's what he did that was wrong about the task force, in
okay.
case you were wondering. The guy who he appointed to lead the task force
yeah,
is the police commissioner in Philadelphia. He used to be the police commissioner in D.C., and he is not a friend to protesters. He is sort of has famously instituted some mass arrest style tactics during a bunch of IMF and World Bank protests. He probably loves a good
tank unleashed Why not? Upon the citizenry.
You know, remember that? No, you don't remember the days when this happened. You weren't in New York. What am I talking about? But there was during the RNC protests, they had a strategy where they just took orange netting and just encompassed entire corners in orange netting and then arrested. So like shoppers got swept up. It was like right on at Herald Square. So like shoppers were getting swept up in this. Tourists were getting swept up in this. It was chaos. It was total chaos.
Too ridiculous.
But I'm sure he would love it. Then so him and Lori Robeson, who is a criminal law scholar, are going to be leading a task force. Apparently in 90 days they'll have ideas. I don't know what.
Great.
Those will consist of thoughts, I guess. Right. Thoughts and feelings. It's not clear what.
That won't be enacted.
Yeah. Well, apparently this program of transferring military grade weaponry to local police forces is like super popular in Congress. So he is not expecting any legislation to really get through on this.
Right. He doesn't care about that.
He does. No, I mean, he doesn't have that as an option anyway, ever in life. But I mean, one of the things he can't recommend legislation to change this procedure.
Got it.
Because
it's going nowhere.
Like super popular with everyone. Everyone who's all the white men in Congress love it, you know?
Of course they do.
Why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
But it's apparently also, they're also claiming it's okay because most of it is office supplies, according to them.
What?
Why does the Pentagon need to be transferring quote-unquote office supplies?
Why do they have so many office supplies?
They have a lot of pens up there? Like, they really? Over-ordered on pens? Like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
They're coming up with, like, some really wacky excuses over this.
I get it.
It's a little funny. But in any case, he's not been to Ferguson. That's sort of the next big controversy to face.
Whether he's going to die. Yeah.
He's also, like, sort of steered clear of speaking about this as personally as he spoke about a lot of, you know, about Trayvon Martin and other instances of, like, sort of institutionalized racism ending in death and other destruction.
And the reason that people are giving to that is because it has been, because it involves law enforcement, I think, is sort of like why he has supposedly stayed out of it anyway.
Right.
I would disagree with, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why he can't say anything about like some,
I think that that's absolutely true. And I think it,
solitary police officer, like in, you know, in
I think
Ferguson,
it has more
Missouri,
to do sort of like with his enemies than it does with, you know, like I don't think that it's like necessarily that his supporters would find fault in that, but I think that it would just sort of like generate a controversy that was not the right controversy.
He just seems to. I just thought maybe in this sort of like, you know, no fucks world that he's been living in, that maybe he would
just
really
do something.
Like,
and also, like, he could change the discussion like he's done on other issues. I mean, that's what he's been so effective at.
Yeah.
He's not been effective policy wise all that much. But he's been really effective at changing discussions. And
that's true.
This is a discussion he could be changing because this is a discussion that he has some sort of like extra authority on because he really has spoken about racial issues very eloquently
in
the past.
Yeah. Well, I think the one thing that he could do is push the Justice Department to bring charges against Darren Wilson because there's still a couple options to do that. They can decide that he violated his civil rights. They can find that I think there's something else that they could charge him with.
Well, and it sounds like Eric Holder is sort of, like, maybe more pissed than anyone's
Eric
letting
Holder
on.
Eric Holder definitely doesn't give any fucks.
He gives no fucks. No, he gives zero fucks because he's on his way out anyway. But, I mean, he sounds, from the way that he's been speaking about this versus the way Obama's been speaking about this, he's a little bit more sort of, like, ticked off, I think.
But he has, supposedly, that's sort of, like, why Obama loves him so much, too, is that he can sort of...
Well, that's why people should love him.
He can be more pissed off about these things than Obama can sort of, like, himself get away with being, like, overtly pissed off about.
Yeah.
So I think it, and so seeing as how he runs the Justice Department, he can, that's right.
Yeah.
I'll
take full credit.
They should do whatever they can.
I think that's important just given how much sort of like discord this has all caused.
And I think it's pretty clear that he probably violated his civil rights.
Well, it's definitely a question when you murder somebody. Once you've stolen someone's life.
If your life isn't a civil right, then...
Then I don't know what is.
I don't know. Yeah.
Isn't this how they finally got OJ?
Civil suit, I think.
It was basically that... I mean, a civil suit is just basically claiming that by murdering someone, you've taken away their civil rights. Like, it's
and
about
that you've
money.
And that you've caused harm, basically.
Right.
So it's easier. Yeah. There's sort of less of a... And I have a feeling you'll probably see that. I would have. I can't see that.
Well, Darren Wilson has already resigned. I mean, there's other sort of instances. There's other reasons that we can sort of suspect that, because it doesn't. The police department hasn't really even backed him up as much as they would, I think, in an instance where they really thought that he was in the right.
I agree.
They've been sort of, like, confused about what to do because they're assholes, but also they don't want to be in the middle of this firestorm. So, like, and he resigned very quickly and without pension. And I just feel like there's reason to believe that maybe there's further fallout to come.
Yeah.
In any case, in other news about people who are leaving places.
Yes.
We talked about Eric Holder.
Who are either resigning or being fired.
Right.
Or both. A combination of both.
Right. In Chuck Hagel's case, we don't know.
Right.
Chuck Hagel is quote-unquote resigning.
Everyone seems to think that he's
being fired.
Been fired. So he is, obviously, he's the secretary, the defense secretary.
Right.
And, you know, Obama has sort of been, I think, being pressured to kind of shake up the national security team. Now, no one thinks that he's actually going to do that because that has been a knock on his national security team, is that it's very insular. You know, he's like best friends with Susan Rice. He's like real chummy with John Kerry, and John Kerry sort of is like working on this Iran deal for him. And, you know, there's the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who's like a big sort of Obama loyalist. And Chuck Hagel seemed to be sort of like the easy out here, which is why everyone sort of seems to think that he probably got pushed out, because he was the easiest one to just sort of be like,
master, all right, bye. Yeah. it seems like he never really got into the inside.
He didn't ever get into the inner circle.
He doesn't seem that fun.
Well, no, he doesn't. And he also sort of like...
Susan Rice seems a little fun.
Right. Well, and they had a big apparent falling out, where he like wrote her a letter about, you know, his anger with her over like what he thought the policy was with Syria, the Syria policy. They got like in a big fight over. So that wasn't looked upon very highly by the Obamas, apparently, because like they didn't think that he should have been taking her to task on that. His resignation ceremony was really weird.
Super awkward.
Yeah, because Obama was talking about him and saying the nice things that you say when somebody like that is resigning. And, you know, Obama's at the podium, and then, like, Chuck Hagel is, like, standing sort of, like, behind, just being, like, talked about. Obama, like, looked back at him and a few times, like, when he said something nice or whatever, and, like, Hagel, like, stared straight ahead and just, like, would not make eye contact with him. Hilarious. And then when he got up there to sort of, like, give his farewell, like, he made a few remarks where he was, like, you know, made some reference about sort of like the decisions of the team, and like he made like a lot of reference to like the teamwork involved, which you can sort of like see as like a good thing, but a lot of people were like seeing that as sort of like what he felt like
it was a knock on how close-knit they are.
Was like the groupthink that he thought was going on sort of like within the administration on foreign policy. So it seemed like sort of like a little curious, or not curious, like a very specific word choice in his farewell. So it doesn't sound like the best of terms are being left on.
No. Yeah. He didn't begin on the best of terms, I feel like. He was sort of like a dud pick.
Right.
I mean...
Well, he was also sort of... He was like... I think he was also kind of like the... I think he got picked just for Obama to kind of like rub in the Republicans' noses on some level, like, because like Chuck Hagel was a Republican, but he was an anti-war Republican.
Yeah.
He was always against the Iraq war. Yeah. And so, you know, I think that he has, you know, there's always been pressure to sort of like have Republicans in the cabinet on some level. And they sort of like, they really hated this. Like, you remember when his confirmation hearings were like really nasty.
Yeah.
And so I think that he was sort of like picked in that regard. And you know, he just sort of was never really necessarily the right choice. And they disagreed on a lot of things.
The wrong choice for, because wasn't it Gates who?
Well, yeah, this is
they kept Gates on, but
yeah,
they're
coming up.
Bush's defense secretary on when they took office, so like they're not exactly famous. But I think that was sort of like, that's why these decisions are getting made in this sort of insular way, is because they keep appointing people they can't work with.
Well, I think so too.
To be Secretary of Defense.
Yeah. Well, but I think that is a problem, though, certainly, because, like, you need to be able to work with the Secretary of Defense.
Right, and they keep throwing bones to Republicans, or twisting the knife on Republicans, or whatever their plan is.
But they're coming up on their fourth one. I mean, on some level, like, is it them or is it you?
Right.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, if you've gone through that many sort of, like, you know, ex-boyfriends as a defense secretary, like, I mean, okay,
you
guys
might not be picking the right people.
Right. Yeah. Or you might be impossible to work with yourselves.
Right. So true.
So, and nobody knows who is going to be...
I don't think I don't think anyone wants to. It sounds like a terrible job.
Supposedly, like, Michelle Flournoy was, like, the immediate person who everybody was talking about. She's, like, the defense undersecretary or something. And she immediately was, like, nope.
Yeah. And then, no, like, people are stepping out of the ring.
Before stepping in. They're just, like, staying entirely clear of
the ring.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, you know, they clashed on a lot of different things. I mean, hey, Obama was never really happy about, how slow he thought that Hagel was sort of like moving prisoners out of Guantanamo. Right. There were troop withdrawals.
Hagel thought that was going too fast. Everywhere forever.
And they fought with like about troop levels in Afghanistan, supposedly. Like all, you know, all of these things are sort of, you know, hearsay on some level. But I mean, like, supposedly these are.
You weren't in the room.
Right. No, I wasn't. No, but I mean, like, even, you know, it's
yeah,
like,
no, it's not even.
Just sort of like the rumors about the issues that they had sort of like during his tenure. Yeah. So anyway, Ted Cruz has a genius plan.
Well, considering how they've been going, I don't see how this is any less genius than what they've been up to in the past.
Yeah.
Joe Lieberman. He belongs to every party and parties.
That's right.
He's a terrible person.
Yeah.
So that could be it.
Win.
Yeah.
You kind of have to have a terrible person running the Secretary of Defense, right?
I guess.
I mean, like,
I feel like there's a genre of terrible, though, that you really want to go with.
No, I think that there is.
The problem is that you have to
pick... People who know this much about war are just not people I want to be friends with.
The genre of terrible, part of the issue is that, like, in order to be the Secretary of Defense, you have to believe in the efficacy of war as a strategy in the first place.
I don't like that.
You're already a terrible person then.
That's it.
Doesn't matter what else you think.
Yeah.
So, it's like, what are you going to do?
Any of the people who are qualified for this job
are terrible.
People I don't like.
No, exactly. They're terrible to begin with. But with that said, Joe Lieberman's not qualified. And he's a different kind of terrorist.
Not qualified to do anything.
He's not qualified to, like, tie his own shoes. Like, the man should not be allowed in world air.
Exactly. Yeah.
In any case.
So those are the big stories of the week.
Right.
I guess. Sort of. Now we're
of in. Of the 2 weeks. There was no news except for Ferguson.
I know. It was so funny because, I mean, Ferguson was obviously, like, such a big story. I was talking to my mom earlier today, and she was like, are you guys doing a podcast? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, so much to talk about. And I was like, oh, God, what?
Right. What are the things?
I had felt like when she said that, because you and I had already talked about how there wasn't anything.
Right.
Well, and she goes, well, Ferguson. And I was like, what?
Yeah. Once we've covered that.
So now we've covered those things.
Right.
And we're on to just crazy random stories.
Yeah, exactly.
So here we go.
We start with Liz Warren.
Yes. Once you're going to go with a crazy random story, like, pick somebody like Liz Warren who you
definitely
love and are obsessed
with. That's what you do.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
Yeah.
And she's doing something brilliant here. Yeah. She can't be stopped.
No, she can't be stopped. Why? Because she's our next president, whether she wants to believe it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. So Obama announced a nominee for, like, one of the top treasury posts, not the treasury secretary.
Right.
Who is like the person who oversees domestic banks and financial regulations of the banks. Liz Warren does not like this person. His name's Antonio
Biden. She's an expert in this area because that's her thing.
That's her bag.
Right.
Yeah. So this guy's name is Antonio Weiss, and he is like a banker, but he has sort of like his expertise is in international deals. And so she doesn't think that he's qualified. And also some of his international deals are like shady.
Yeah.
So, and he has sort of like worked tirelessly to get, you know, big corporations, like international deals to where they wouldn't have to pay any taxes.
Yeah.
Like most recently, and I remember when this happened actually, like he helped Burger King merge with this like Canadian based company.
Tim Hortons.
So they wouldn't have to pay any taxes.
Yeah.
So that's sort of like that's his deal.
Right.
And she doesn't think that he should be overseeing domestic bank regulations, which maybe makes logical sense.
She would be the one to know.
Yeah. But his supporters like called her out immediately on it and told her that she was like doing political grandstanding.
I love that because how could you possibly be grandstanding on something this obscure that nobody knows anything about?
Nobody cares about this. Like, this is not a thing.
Which of her constituents were like, aha?
Right. This is like, only a story, I think, because I think people are, you know, under the assumption that because she's from the president's party and that things like this usually are just confirmed without sort of like, you know, any sort of fanfare that she is, you know, doing it for some other reason. But obviously, I mean, she's doing it because this is close to her heart.
Yeah. I mean, this really is, you know, financial regulation is sort of like what she's there to do.
Right, exactly.
That's what she, that's her expertise.
Yeah.
So.
So anyway, but she, yeah, so she got called out on that, but like she came back like firing and she like, because she had written an op-ed in HuffPo where she like said that she was not going to, you know, support him. And that's sort of like where all of this played out. But now some other like progressives are starting, like Bernie Sanders has said that he's not going to support him. I think somebody else recently did too. I'm sure they probably don't have enough votes to sort of like harpoon the whole thing, but I mean,
no, but
good for her.
Finally, some progressives doing some work in the Senate. I mean, for God's sake.
Seriously. People. Well, and this is what you and I said needed to happen now that we don't have the majority anyway.
Yeah.
We need to
We need to fall apart completely.
we need to fall apart completely. But no, but we need to have... There was actually even a story I think I sent to you recently about, like, the... it was in Politico about, like, the sort of, you know, the rise of the progressive say no... You know, the say no caucus, basically, or whatever. Yeah. Because, like, now that they're in the minority, like, there's going to be sort of, like, you know, people like Liz Warren who are sort of going to have to be the backbone of the party or else, you know, who are they?
No, exactly.
So,
well, and I think could potentially save the backbone of the party a little bit because these people are proposing policy that's much more popular with voters than what the actual party is talking about.
Well, exactly.
So these people could help us.
Greatly.
Guys. Also, there was... There's a new Benghazi report, as there always, there's always a new Benghazi report, but there's a new Benghazi report that the House Intelligence Committee released that undermines a whole bunch of GOP talking points.
Basically all of them.
All of them.
Any of the things that you heard on Fox News have now been undermined debunked by
a Republican-led committee. That, I mean, it came out of a committee led by Mike Rogers, who is a Republican.
Right.
People
immediately started throwing him under the bus.
And then he threw the report under the bus. He threw himself under the bus.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
Because then Newt Gingrich got all up in arms. Also, why is Newt Gingrich talking about anything? Get off the airwaves, Newt Gingrich.
I know.
But then, so then Mike Rogers started being like, well, we didn't examine the role of the State Department. Like, he started backtracking from, like, what their research had been into the issue.
Yeah.
Here's why. Because every Republican that's thoroughly obsessed with this has a claim that is debunked by this report.
Yeah.
This Republican report that they've released.
Daryl Issa, who was sort of leading the charge on this initially, it doesn't have any ground. Like,
He has been going around obsessively talking about how there was some sort of like, that the safety of everyone at the American consulate in Libya was undermined by the stand down order
that
he invented.
Yes.
It's an invented stand down. So basically he's claiming that like the Clinton and the administration just sort of like, decided not to send help to the American, like that they heard what was going on and they just told everyone not to do anything.
Yeah, but this report concluded that no CIA officer was told to stand down.
No.
So
there were some disagreements about how quickly they should go in and tactically like what they should do.
Right.
But everything was done in a quote timely and appropriate manner.
Yes.
So screw yourself, Daryl Issa.
Yeah.
Also, stop talking about this, Daryl Issa.
Come on, I know.
Retire and go about your business.
Our friend Steve Stockman.
Yes, always a trustworthy source of news.
Yes, claimed that the Obama administration ignored calls for help at the Benghazi consulate and committed, quote, fatal errors and possible crimes in its response. Now, unfortunately, that is also not correct for Steve Stockman.
Their Republican report on this... on this.
We can't stress that enough.
Right.
Guys,
this really can't
by
be
the way.
The Republican report on this said that the embassy received as much military support as was available and that there was no, obviously, you know, we said there's no stand down order, but there was also that, you know, nobody was left behind. There was no, you know, stand down order for air support. Like all of the things that Steve Stockman has been talking about this whole time are just patently untrue.
Yeah. But it also concluded that U.S. personnel made reasonable tactical decisions.
Yes.
So this report did not question the decisions that got made in the response to what was happening there.
No.
So, I mean, that in and of itself.
They tried to throw in a little thing about how they were mad that, like, the Susan Rice remarks were not, like, you know, well written. But,
be
like,
mad about that.
Who cares about that?
But like, that's not.
It's, like, the least important part of the whole thing.
I was going to say, that's
not. Louis Gohmert has been has been going around claiming there's some sort of cover-up going on.
Right. Meanwhile,
like, Watergate style. He keeps comparing it to Watergate. Like, how is this the same thing as Watergate?
Right. Also, how can there be sort of, like, this insane cover-up when you have all the facts.
Yeah.
There's like, been 100 different reports about this.
There's not all missing facts here.
All of the every single fact is available for Louis Gohmert to have.
Yeah.
They're all there.
As is the case in over many issues, has chosen not to have all the facts.
Right.
Just of his own personal, you know.
He doesn't like
having all the facts. No. That's not his style.
No.
But In any case, they concluded that there were plenty of facts and there was no cover-up going on.
Right, there was no office. None of the officers were intimidated. Nobody was wrongly forced to sign a non-disclosure agreement. No one was kept from speaking about what happened to Congress. Nobody was polygraphed to figure out.
I mean, he's been going on about people being polygraphed.
Yeah.
That's not a thing.
Yeah, none of the things that he's claiming in regards to a cover-up actually happened. So he's got those facts if he wants them.
Right.
He doesn't.
He doesn't want them, unfortunately.
No.
There's the Lindsey Graham and Michelle Bachmann caucus who basically claim that, like, they knew there were going to be problems. They knew that there were problems with the security at the Benghazi compound and that everyone had been, like, actively ignoring the signs that this was going to fall apart.
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham, in particular, talks about this being, like, an issue, though, like, as if the embassy had just been, like, actively, you know, allowed to crumble for years.
And then Hillary Clinton got away with murder because she, like, didn't sort of, you know, ask for the proper help or whatever at the consulate. But, like, the report says there was no intelligence failure prior to the attacks, okay?
Yeah.
And it also said there was no specific tactical warning of any threat.
Basically,
to the consulate.
No one fucking knew this was going to happen. Nobody knew. Just a freak thing. That's a thing that happens in a place like Libya. So, like, slow your roll. Yes. For God's sakes. And then Michelle Bachmann, who claims that, you know, that they were begging for help at the time and that no one came to help them. And so, like, two, like, rebel Navy SEALs acted against orders. And, like, she's telling, like, a whole crazy story, by the way.
Yeah, she's got it.
She's made up a narrative. She's made up a very detailed story about what happened. But the report makes clear that no one, you know, as no one was told to stand down, as we know, but also, like, the guys who were acting as part of this Navy SEAL team were doing it as part of, like, a concerted effort by the military to, like, go in and rescue people, not just, like, acting alone by themselves in some sort of heroic action movie capacity.
Right. Exactly. Oh, God.
But the article that we read this in points out, and I think most importantly, that Bachmann's other claim, that the Benghazi attacks might be the judgment of God, were not addressed by the report.
Interesting.
So we'll have to just wait on that. We may never know. And so we're finally getting into the season where random people start announcing their candidacy for president. That's our favorite time of year, by the way,
really
guys, in case you were wondering.
And we've got our first one, and it's really exciting,
guys! Yes, it's a person you've maybe heard of, but probably haven't.
His name's Jim Webb!
Yes, and you don't know him, because he is just a one-time senator.
He is the first person on the list of people who has no chance at being president.
Correct. But he's the first to announce.
Doing it anyway.
Good for him.
That's right.
He hasn't announced. He's formed an exploratory committee, and his website has gone live, and he's released a 14-minute video on YouTube about...
That is way too long to listen to Jim Webb do anything.
So true. Jim Webb, by the way, is an annoying person for other reasons. One being that he's a party switcher.
Yes.
He worked under the Reagan administration as a Republican would. Yeah. And then he ran for Senate in Virginia after George Allen...
Yes. Well, that's the thing. He only became a senator because of Macaca.
It was after the Macaca. There was George Allen, who was the incumbent senator.
George Allen was like a soon-to-be supposed presidential candidate.
Right. He was a big... That was in
he was
that
a big
year.
Deal.
Wasn't that the Christine O'Donnell year, though? That was like a year where all sorts of things were... It was before that. It was 2006, right?
It was an off year...
It was 2006.
Bush
yeah.
Year.
It was an off-year Bush year. But it was like one of those years where a sort of bizarre wing of right-wingers were trying to take over the country. And there were some weird things that happened in that election.
Yeah.
And one of them was the Macaca comment.
Yeah.
Jim Webb came sweeping into office. It was the first and last time anyone heard of him. Did one term in the Senate and was sort of not into it.
Nope.
So he was just sort of like,
Left,
I don't care.
Wrote a book.
As you would, I guess, if you're running for president.
That's right. Yep.
And he's been sort of stumping for the Democrats off and on for the last few years.
Sure.
But he's also been complaining about them a lot.
Yeah.
So he's sort of like a really disloyal stumper who just sort of, he like stumped for Obama in the last election, but like then was sort of mad at Obama in the next. And he stumped in the last election, but like didn't, like in 2012, but like then was, then also kept speaking out against Obama. It's been a mess for Jim Webb. And he's never really enjoyed the political part of being political.
Well, that's going to be a problem.
Which is going to be a problem. My favorite part about this is that his campaign launched their site, Web 2016, this weekend as part of this big push. no one had noticed that they actually registered this domain name in October. So this is like, he's like so under the radar that like no one even noticed that.
Right.
If Hillary Clinton registered a domain name,
that's it.
That would be the end. Like, we'd know. Yeah. We'd all know everything already. Yeah. We would have known that seconds after it
happened.
Wouldn't
have taken a month and a half.
Would not have taken a month and a half for us to find out. And for the website to actually go live. Like,
I know.
So that we can, I guess, know what he stands for. I don't know. But in any case, his book almost makes it seem like he was sort of not interested in continuing with politics. So it's like sort of surprising. And he's the first sort of like kind of candidate from any party. So now he's like the only guy on the scene.
It's just exciting that somebody got the ball rolling.
Also,
that's what's exciting about this.
He doesn't say which nomination he's going for.
Well, that's true.
And we don't have a way of knowing.
Nope.
Because the man has a history of not knowing.
We don't have a way of knowing, and we certainly don't have a way of caring. No way to do either of those
things. So we will keep you updated on the exciting happenings of the Jim Webb presidency right up until a second person announces.
No. And we can immediately forget that he ever existed.
Exactly. Yeah, like, who was the guy who was going to run for president last time, but, like, didn't get enough signatures?
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is going to be, like, one. And then he decided to write a screenplay, like a sci-fi screenplay or something.
He's like the Mike Gravel of the 2016 race. Do you remember that guy who was, like, the Alaska senator who was, like, ran as for the Democrat? He was the first person to announce that he was running as a Democrat. And, like, people
you
were
don't
like, who
ever
the fuck
want
are you?
To be the first person to announce. That's never a smart move. Because then your moment comes and goes before anyone else is in the ring.
Yeah.
And then you don't get a chance to hit off, you know, go off against the heavy hitters.
Yeah.
So,
He's now the front runner
for
the nomination.
For a while, he will be the front runner, and that will be exciting, I'm sure, for him.
Yeah.
It'll give him some time to decide which party to run.
A while ago.
Let's declare now. Let's declare right now.
Let's do it.
We've declared. We did it. We're done. We're running for president.
Great.
Feel free to write us in anywhere you live.
We probably have a bigger fan base than Jim Webb does.
So true. meanwhile, the big controversy of the last day.
Oh, yeah. Breaking news.
This is breaking news, and we're putting it last because it will definitely be the least important story of the next 3 days. There was this GOP staffer who, first of all, remember how Obama and any president who's been the president has to like pardon a turkey
on
Thanksgiving?
Come on.
Don't be pardoning turkeys. Don't pardon animals ever.
Right.
I mean,
or at least let Joe Biden do it or something.
Right. Like, why does the president have to show up to that?
This is
a dumb ritual that no one cares about.
The office of the presidency.
Exactly. In any case, so he went and pardoned the turkey, and his daughters came and like were very bored, obviously, because you would be watching him pardon a turkey.
Yeah.
And so this woman, who's the communications director, or was the communications director for a Tennessee representative, Stephen Fincher, wrote this like weird rant on Facebook where she like scolds Sasha and Malia for like wearing inappropriate outfits and looking
bored,
weren't, basically.
Like, they weren't dressed to the nines.
No, they were just wearing clothing.
But
like
they were
teenagers
wearing, they
were covered.
They didn't look like tramps.
No,
I mean,
they were wearing dresses and tights and sweaters. I mean, like, he was pardoning a fucking turkey.
Right.
It wasn't
a state dinner.
It wasn't a state dinner. Like, come on. And I feel like, also, I think she was responding to the fact that they were wearing skirts that were kind of short.
But they also weren't that short.
They weren't that short. And they were teenagers. So it wasn't like
they weren't dressed.
The
moral of the story is they weren't dressed inappropriately.
And they were wearing tights.
And she sort of like also, you know, I think a lot of people saw it as cyberbullying.
Yeah.
So.
Very much. I mean, like, that's all I could come up with that she could have possibly been talking about, because otherwise I felt like they looked.
I was fine.
Perfectly responsible. In any case, she writes, "Dear Sasha and Malia, I get that you're both in those awful teen years, but you're part of the first family. Try showing a little class. At least respect the part you play."
Yeah.
I have a couple things to point out about this before the story moves on.
Right, okay, great.
One being...
I was going to move on, but take your time.
That Sasha and Malia were not elected to office. They don't have any responsibility. They're not playing any part.
That's true.
They're just the children of the president.
They could have...
They couldn't help that.
Right, no.
They
could have looked like tramps if they wanted to.
Exactly. That would have been within their rights.
Because they are classy. Because
they are classy. But my point is that it is within their rights to be as trampy as they feel like being.
They didn't need to go.
They didn't need to do anything. Yeah. It was nice of them to show up and support their dad as he did this dumb ritual.
Yeah. But
in any case.
But she went on.
Yes.
And got even sort of like, you know,
nastier.
And she said, "Then again, your mother and father don't respect their positions very much, or the nation for that matter. So I'm guessing you're coming up a little short in the good role model department." Yikes.
She would know a lot about that, though.
Yeah.
Because the first that everyone dug up about her was that she had an arrest record.
Yep.
Because as the classy teenager that she probably was.
I was
going
to say, and it was when she was an awful teenager, too.
She got arrested for shoplifting from a Belk department store.
But don't do that.
Talk about classy.
I know.
That's not talking about classy. That's the opposite of talking about classy.
Steal from someplace nice, for God's sake.
For God's sake. Also, talk about being in the awful teen years. Like, that's a thing that awful teenagers are doing.
Right.
Sasha and Malia showing up at a dumb ritual and looking a little bored is not an awful thing for anyone to do.
No.
Because it is boring to watch anyone pardon a turkey.
Yeah.
Newsflash, guys.
Well, in any case, just too... I mean, once the daughters of the president are smart enough to realize that what's going on around them is just too ridiculous to be involved in.
Also,
like, that's when you know
they're 16 and 13. They're not 7 and 9. Like,
well, right, exactly.
Those two different age ranges, by the way.
I know. Sure. Whatever. That's fine.
I hate math.
Yeah. No, it's too hard.
7 and 10. My point is that they're too old. They're too old to care about this stuff. Anyway, it's nice that they came.
Yeah.
They're very responsible kids.
Yeah.
They have tough parents. I think Michelle's probably a pretty tough mother.
She claims to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
But anyway, she has resigned.
Yes.
She's done. And she, like, wrote, like, what seemed to be actually a fairly sincere apology about it. Like, I think that she... This is, like, one of those things that you write and that you put on Facebook. And if you're not, like, a total, like mental...
Right.
Person, like, you realize as soon as you've posted it on Facebook that was the wrong choice. That it was the wrong choice.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things where everybody's done it. Everybody's done something dumb on social media where you fired off something that you thought was, like, either eloquent or that was, like, a really reasoned thing that you were saying, and then realized as soon as you hit post
that you were just, you had, like, a crazy
that it was not the thing.
That was, like,
yeah. So,
yeah, I
maybe she's not that smart. I don't know. But
well,
I mean,
I feel like sometimes people, and, you know, people on both sides of the aisle do this, but I think it veers towards more offensive when Republicans do this, just because of the nature of their positions, like, get wrapped up in their own fury about things that are like this could not have been a dumber topic.
Well,
to
just
be
don't
commenting
post
on.
This.
Don't
have this opinion in your brain if you're dumb enough to have it. But like
don't post that. And like I can see her being like riled into like a ball of fury over this just because she's like in a state of fury already.
Yeah.
And like posting something like this and then being like, oh, wait a minute. I also am a human. Like, should I have thought about this as a human before I thought about this as a Republican?
Well, and also just like the, you know, stupidity that it takes to post something like that, I think. And that was what what I was feeling about a lot of the things I was seeing in regards to Ferguson on my Facebook, because it was sort of like, don't be a racist in life. But if you're choosing to be a racist, like, keep it to yourself on social media. Like,
in
I just
your
like,
brain,
and that was,
you don't have to share that.
I feel
that.
Like that was, it wasn't bugging me as much because obviously racism is worse.
Right.
But I mean, like, just how stupid do you have to be to, like, you know, like, my cousin posted a thing that was, like, you know, showed somebody, like, looting in Ferguson, and, like, the caption was, like, oh, I guess everybody in Ferguson got all their Christmas shopping done early. Like, just don't post that.
No.
Like, that's not a thing.
It's so
don't
easy
do
to
that.
Not post something
you can just,
like
exactly,
that.
Like, you can,
it's, you can see it and chuckle to yourself if you're a horrible person, but you don't
done.
Have to post it.
That's it. Don't hit the share button.
No, it's so easy.
Stop.
It's easier, in fact.
That's right.
Those are people that made an extra effort.
That's right.
So, in any case, people are misunderstanding social media, I think, too much.
I think
and
so.
We are not the people to explain it to you, but we know at least that much.
Right. We know what not to do. We don't always know
what
to
do. Right. We're having trouble with that. But we're very clear on what not to do.
Right. And it's that.
And it's that. Meanwhile, in final news, here's a story Brent doesn't care about at all.
I saw this on the document and I was like, well, I don't know what any of this is, but it sounds funny, so take it away.
It's a minor story. It was only because I saw it today in the news and I was sort of like, oh, interesting. Because do you remember when there was this trial that went on I think it was in 2009, where Brooke Astor of socialite Astor fame, her son was tried for like stealing like $60 million from his mother, who had Alzheimer's at the time. And there were all of these reports that came out about the horrible conditions that she had been living in in her old age.
I do vaguely remember this.
The Astors.
Yeah, right.
Now, the Astors are something that I care about because that's like an old New York family and everything in New York is named after them. And they're sort of like a big part of New York City history.
Yeah.
So that is maybe why I am fascinated by the Astors. But what I remember most about the story was that when you read the story, you were like, gosh, this is horrifying. And then you realized that every person named in the story was like in their 80s. Like, it was entirely about elderly people. So like, Brooke Astor lived to be like 1 trillion years old. And the son that was embezzling all this money from her was like also 1 trillion years old. And so the news is not anything about that trial. He was eventually sentenced to 3 years in prison, but only served 3 months because he was 1 trillion years old. And he died this weekend.
Yeah, he just died. Yeah.
He just died on Sunday at age 90. Oh, so the 5 years ago when this trial was going on was when he was age 85.
That's right.
And that's what was going on. Anyway, it was just sort of like a crazy story. But I think what is also interesting about this is that his obituary included no mention of this whole fiasco.
Because which is like the only reason, I mean, other than
it was
just
written
being
by
rich,
his wife. Like, the obituary, I think like it was even like the Times obituary, like the official paper of record obituary makes no mention of him being convicted of embezzling $60 million from Brooke Astor, his mother.
His mother.
In any case.
Oh boy.
And that's the news. So now you know that.
Right, there it is.
We will be back next week.
Yes, we will.
At a regularly scheduled time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will hear about, hopefully, something besides riots and protests happening.
Maybe
I mean, we love protests, but...
Yeah, maybe a new person that you've never heard of will announce that they've heard. Oh, I was watching Meet the Press yesterday, and Ben Carson was on the panel of, you know, race relations, and sort of actually said some reasonable things, but only because I think that he sort of has the ability to, you know, speak on race as an African-American. They asked him if he was running for president, and he sort of like giggled and was kind of like, I'm thinking about it. Like, so
he's running for president.
He's running for president.
Obviously.
There's a lot of people that we know are running for president.
Yeah, there's a lot of people we know. Not all of them have announced themselves and then released their campaign website.
Right.
And a 14-minute video.
Yeah.
Don't make any 14-minute videos ever.
Too long.
We had this discussion with
ISIS
recently.
Right.
And we're going to have it with Jim Webb as well. It doesn't matter how evil or not evil you are or how innocuous you are.
It's
14 minutes is longer than people want to see.
That's right.
On a video. So just keep that in mind.
Especially when you're boring.
Yeah. If you're boring, especially. Yeah. If it's like 14 minutes of roller coasters, then maybe people will watch that. I don't know. 14 minutes of cats walking around. That's more interesting. But like.
Yeah. People can watch 14 minutes of cats.
People can watch 14 minutes of cats for sure. But Jim Webb is not a cat.
He's not.
That's the only thing we know about him, but we know that for sure.
Yeah.
So, like, calm down.
So, cut that in, like, one, you know.
Million.
Million. Yeah,
and make a 30-second spot like a human.
That's it.
For God's sake.
That's all you need.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
30 seconds in and out. We will see you next week.
Yes.
And until then, I don't know, eat a lot of Christmas
candy
or something.
Do that.
Candy canes.
Yeah.
They're in season, finally.
Mm-hmm.
I've been waiting for a long time.
I know you have.
So, enjoy those.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.